Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple's on the defensive. Google just is going to take on Evernote. Is that for real? And Verizon fighting for a la carte, sort of. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, March 18th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT3. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Chad Johnson.
And Jason Hell is off with some baby stuff today, but we're still going to keep you up to date with the most important tech news stories of the day, starting with the news feeds. Sony announced two Android smartphones, the Xperia SP and the Xperia L. The Xperia SP has a 4.6-inch 720p reality display with 1280 by 720 resolution and automatically adjusts brightness based on what content is on the screen. The Xperia L is a lower-end handset with a 4.3-inch display. The Xperia SP and the Xperia L will be available worldwide starting in the second quarter of 2013.
Lenovo has announced the availability of its latest in the T-Series ThinkPad Ultrabook line. The new T431S is built around the third-gen Intel Core i5 and i7 processors with integrated Intel HD 4000 graphics, 14-inch screen, up to 12 gigabytes of memory, and a selection of storage options, including up to a terabyte hard drive, 24 gigabytes mSATA cache drive, and up to a 256 gigabyte solid-state drive.
Speaking to the Australian Financial Review, BlackBerry CEO Torsten Hines says that Apple did a great job bringing touch devices to the market, but Apple's UI is looking a bit stale as it's 5 years old. Hines says BlackBerry's multitasking outclasses the iPhone. He also spoke to the news that Lenovo is seemingly interested in picking up BlackBerry. Hines says, "I don't know why they are going public with anything like that," and called the story rumor and speculation.
The Illinois Eavesdropping Act forbade recording people without the consent of everyone involved. Most often, it was used to prevent people from recording police officers in action. In November, the U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the law was unconstitutional, and now the Northern Illinois District Court judge has ruled that Cook County taxpayers must pay $645,549 of the legal bill that the ACLU racked up prosecuting the county's state prosecutor over that Eavesdropping Act's enforcement. Payment of that penalty will be finalized at a Cook County board meeting on Wednesday of next week, according to the Chicago Sun-Times.
Android police discovered some source code yesterday that pointed to Google planning possibly something at drive.google.com/keep that allows users to do things like take notes, save websites, stuff that seems very Evernote-y. They got some screenshots, too. The desktop version had actually even gone live earlier, but shortly after the discovery, the whole service went offline, indicating maybe it had emerged to the world just a little prematurely.
According to the Wall Street Journal, Verizon's Fios TV unit is negotiating with mid-tier and smaller media companies to change the way Verizon pays them for their television content. Verizon is proposing that the company pay these channels based on how many unique views of 5 minutes or more they garner each month. Verizon has yet to broach the topic with the major players.
The SimCity controversy just won't die. After several demonstrations that SimCity could run offline with just a little bit of code modification, Lucy Bradshaw, head of SimCity's maker Maxis, posted on her blog that they could have built a subset offline mode for the game, but it didn't fit with their vision. Bradshaw said Maxis wanted to make the simulation more realistic by letting cities share elements like pollution, crime, and other resources.
THX has filed a lawsuit against Apple, alleging Apple infringed on its speaker designs. THX holds a patent dated back to 2008 that covers narrow profile speaker designs in consumer electronics and the ability to boost sound output. This technology is used in the iPhone 4S, the iPhone 5, some of the iPad models, and some iMacs as well.
Andrew Auerheimer, a.k.a. Weave, was sentenced this morning by federal court in New Jersey to 3 years, 5 months in jail for collecting the email addresses of 120,000 iPad owners exposed publicly by AT&T on its website. Auerheimer and Daniel Spittler wrote a script that collected the publicly available addresses, then contacted Gawker to make the press aware of the breach. AT&T has not been sued for leaking the email addresses, and Auerheimer plans to appeal the decision.
Facebook's got a new CTO, and it's Mike Schrepfer. The company's previous CTO, Brett Taylor, left back in June 2012. Schrepfer has been with Facebook for around 5 years and was previously Facebook's VP of Engineering. Before his life at Facebook, he was VP of Engineering at Mozilla and the CTO of Sun Microsystems.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ring Central. When we built the studio here at Twit, as you've heard us say, we didn't want to spend a lot of money on a lot of this, the old-fashioned things. We didn't want to, like, line the basement with all this PBX hardware. So Russell, our IT guy, suggested RingCentral, and we love it. RingCentral is zero startup cost, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. Allows you to easily customize all of your call handling. If people want to send you a fax, you can get it right on your smartphone. And they have a new feature called Business SMS. Now you can send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number on RingCentral. You don't have to use your personal cell phone for that. So it's all-inclusive pricing, as low as $20 a month per user. And you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com, use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And this week is the 137th anniversary of the first telephone call. RingCentral conducted some market research, has some interesting stats on how much has changed since then, especially for work. For example, nearly 80% of adults now use their mobile phones to text for business, with 32% even closing business deals via text. Check out RingCentral's infographic with more interesting stats like this at blog.ringcentral.com. Well, joining us now to discuss the news of the day, very happy to have back on the show Lamar Wilson, the world's funniest tech reporter at youtube.com/Lamar Wilson. How's it going, Lamar?
It's going great. Good to see you, buddy.
Thank you for getting up early for us.
Way too early.
Believe me, I know.
I'm in zombie mode right now, so let's do it before I eat your brain.
Brains away from Lamar. let's start by talking about a bunch of buzz going on over the weekend about Apple being on the defensive. Now, here's part of the reason why. Apple's created a page called Why iPhone, a little un-Apple-like in that they're laying out all the reasons that the Retina display is better, even though it's not the highest resolution display out there, touting their camera quality, which pretty much everybody agrees iPhone, one of the best, if not the best camera in a smartphone out there, talking about Apple's support, ease of use, etc. Jean-Louis Gasset on MondayNote.com had put up a post called Apple is losing the war of words, essentially arguing Apple has lost the plot here and they need to come out and say things like this. So maybe this fits in with what he was saying. He was noting that when Phil Schiller told the Wall Street Journal that the Samsung Galaxy S4 would ship with a year-old OS, even before people found out that that wouldn't be true, they were upset about that. Gasset also suggested Apple should go on a full offensive to change the story or just shut up entirely. And do what they've always done, let the numbers do the talking. Christina Bonington over at Wired has a story, 3 things Samsung needs to do to overtake Apple. Improve the design, control the experience, improve their brand power so they get better deals and they can actually give you a release date and a price when they announce a product. And then there was Engadget Expand happening over the weekend and a panel there led by unofficial Apple weblog editor-in-chief Victor Agreda. Gene Munster said that really, this is all cyclical. It's the lack of a product launch. They usually have a spring launch. They didn't have a spring launch yet. And they've been moving around some executives. So, you know, some things are delayed, but this will all come back. He still expects they'll be at Apple Television by the end of the year. So I want to go around the horn on this. Is Apple actually in trouble, or is just, as some people have suggested, the media is getting bored with the Apple story and they're coming up with stuff to make it more dramatic? Sarah, what do you think?
I think this, to me, I know a lot of people go, ooh, you know, this is very un-Apple-like. That you're just supposed to know that Apple's the best, and now they're having to remind people. What I see on this website is very much the kinds of things that Apple reminds us of when they have an event. You know, they remind, you know, people that we've got the best camera. We, you know, we have the most beautiful hardware. Here's our manufacturing process. Here's why Apple's second to none in all these ways. So this is kind of like, yeah, well, they don't really have an event right now. So let's just remind people of, you know, stuff that we would have reminded them of if somebody was standing on a stage and a bunch of journalists were sitting in the audience anyway. So to me, I don't feel like this feels too pandery or, ooh, Apple's falling behind and they're forced to remind people that they're still around. It's a little bit odd that we don't have an event to look forward to, or certainly, you know, nobody's gotten an invite of anything that's happening in the next month or so. So I don't know. I think this is it's a holdover.
Lamar, is that what it is? Is it we just missing having that Apple event? Last one we had was last fall.
I think Sarah is right on the point there. I think Apple is on the defensive, but I agree with you. They really need to control the story. They've always been great storytellers, and now with them being silent, everyone else is controlling the story. Samsung, even with their horrible story last week that I was attending, they told a story that it was fit for the regular consumer. Apple had to come out and say something since they're not having an event. So I think it's a non-issue. I think that it's good that they remind people that they do have the best in some areas. And even if they are not as truthful with some other ones, it's all about customer perception.
Ayaz, what do you think? Is Apple just in a kind of a weird media cycle?
I think so. I mean, right now, everyone is introducing their phones. The other companies out there that make phones have gotten wise to Apple's scheduling, so they're releasing phones at a certain time of the year. And the thing is, when people are looking to decide what phone to get or to upgrade, they're going to look at the iPhone, they're going to look at Apple.com, they're going to see this list, as well as look at Samsung's sites, look at other reports out there to see what's the best phone out there. And looking at what Apple's got going in this Y iPhone, a lot of this will probably be applicable to the next iPhone as well. So it's not that surprising to see something like this, especially since they don't have anything coming out for probably a couple months.
Yeah, I honestly think that the problem here is that Apple hasn't had an announcement. We're used to that rhythm of having, well, it used to be a January announcement, but then it was at least like a February or a January announcement. And then we'd get the June WWDC, then we get the summer release, and then we get the fall announcement. And essentially what they've done is say WWDC is about announcing OS and fall is about announcing products. I think Apple's doing that because they say, we're not going to announce anything until we're actually ready. We're not going to be held to a pattern. But I also, I agree with Jean-Louis Gasset in that I don't think they should be out there saying anything. I don't think Phil Schiller should be talking to the Wall Street Journal trying to disrupt Samsung Galaxy S4 unless he can really announce something good or announce something valuable, just saying that they're going to ship with a year-old operating system, which they aren't. They're shipping with Jelly Bean. I see that as causing some of the perception that they're on the defensive. But barring another product actually coming out and us actually getting to evaluate it, I don't think they're actually falling behind.
I think they're going to have to be a lot more aggressive with their product launches because this 1 to 2 year cycle just doesn't work anymore, especially for the international market that does not have the same kind of contracts we do. So it's going to be interesting to see what they roll out next. They really need to be more creative like they were last year, rolling out basically 3 iPads and, you know, pissing off quite a few people, but they were trying to do something different. And I think they're going to have to do that in the phone market or else, again, their story is going to be told by someone else.
Let's talk about another story, which is Google launching a product and then nobody used it right away, so they got rid of it. Is that what happened, Sarah?
Yeah. It's a lot. No. This is actually a product that doesn't technically exist, but it certainly looks like it's about to. Yesterday, Android police had noticed some source code that was kind of interesting. It was pointing to, like I said in the news fuse, something at drive.google.com/keep, like keep as in K-E-E-P. What was that? Well, it turned out that with a little digging, there was a desktop version that had gone live. Now, somebody on Google Plus had posted something. Android police took a bunch of screenshots. The blog sort of caught fire. and the whole service went offline in the blink of an eye. But, you know, the screenshots still survive. We've got a little bit of a logo here. It looks like, to me, sort of a cross between the Reminders app in iOS and even OS X and something like Evernote. So you've got an add to keep functions for web pages. Keep, of course, being the name of the service. You've got color-coded notes. You've got an ability to add and save pictures and create lists and share those with others. It's pretty cool. I mean, we don't know if it's going to change at all before this comes about, but it certainly looks like something that's being ready. And it might have been coincidence, but a lot of people noticed that their Google Drives were either not even available to access this morning. Certainly, I was one of them, or just had slowed to a crawl. So a few of us were hoping, well, maybe this is Keep being launched. But it doesn't appear to be alive yet. But The Verge notes, it kind of looks like Google's old failed notebook service. And when I read that, I was like, Google's notebook service? I don't even remember that.
I do.
You do?
I used to use it all the time with Google Reader in conjunction with that. I would save everything with Google Notebook, and then they eventually they discontinued that usage. To me, Google Keep looks a lot like their Tasks app that's built into Gmail, which is that silly little extra window. I really don't like the way that's implemented in email. I think to have a central repository for this information makes a lot of sense, but the weird thing is, this worked, like Notebook worked really well with Reader. When you wanted to save things, you'd keep it, or you'd keep it in your notebook. Maybe this will be integrated into something like when you plus one something, it'll go into there. Because otherwise, it's just a rehash of what existed before, but the interface looks a lot more simple. Notebook was kind of a power user kind of thing, and I could see why they discontinued it. But I'm kind of excited that Google is going to have a Keep function, or at least it looks like they're going to, because I use a lot of their services anyway.
Lamar, do you think, Google Reader's going away. There's a lot of talk that Google Reader was really just great for power users as well. Is this sort of a rehash of Google's notebook that looks a little bit more user-friendly, a la Evernote?
Yeah, I really agree with that. I was a former Evernote user, just changed over to Google Drive, which is a little clunky, but I wanted to kind of streamline and also use Google Tasks, which are not that good. So seeing this just got me super excited because finally I can have everything in one place. Also, it hasn't really been mentioned, Sarah, but I really see this as a pocket replacement. Being able to save websites directly off, online, offline reading. That'll be exciting because that's one more thing I can get rid of and streamline everything into my Google life. So it looks good. I can't wait for it to come out.
Tom, what do you think? Is this a feature that you feel Google Drive is sorely lacking?
I tell you what, I mean, I'm not a big, I use SimpleNote for I guess the equivalent of this, and I don't see this swaying me over, so maybe that's why I feel this way, but I'm a little bit burned by Google Reader. I would definitely see myself use this as a pocket sort of replacement from Google Reader, but if Google Reader is going away, why should I suddenly trust that Google is going to provide me a cloud service that's going to stick around? That is similar to that. Now, granted, I'm being hypocritical when I say that because I use Gmail, although I start to wonder, like, maybe I shouldn't use Gmail. I use Google Drive to store all our documents. We do our rundown in Google spreadsheets. So, I obviously am not like ditching Google because I'm so mad, but there's a little bit of doubt in my mind, like, well, if it's a new service, would I want to switch to it? Because, I don't know. I used to rely on one service that just went away. Maybe I'm just post-reader stress disorder.
Yeah, I was really invested in the reader myself. So there was a little of that burn effect. But I'm also a Google Plus user, one of the many who do use it. So I just simply transferred sites that I follow to Google Plus, and it's working for now. I think that's what Google wanted people to do. They just didn't communicate it the right way. Just saying we're going to abruptly shut it down with no recourse was definitely a burn.
Yeah, it wasn't messaged well. The communication wasn't handled.
They should have used Google Wave to get that message out there, or Google Buzz.
Oh.
Sorry.
I saw it on Buzz. I don't know. Last week, we heard about Cablevision starting a lawsuit to fight against bundling, and now Verizon's joining the battle.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal is saying that Verizon is proposing to pay individual channels by how many unique views of 5 minutes or more they rack up each month. And currently, the way it works is distributors pay a monthly per subscriber fee based on the number of homes where the channels are available. It doesn't matter if anybody watches them. It's if it's available, that's how they pay. Now, Verizon would not be using Nielsen ratings. It'd be using data extracted from its own set-top boxes. And Verizon's chief programming negotiator, Terry Denson, he says that the company's in talks with mid-tier and smaller media companies, and the negotiations are inching forward. He also said they haven't raised the idea with big media companies, which own like the majority of TV channels. Tom, do you think this is going to spark any a la carte television, or the network's just going to crush this?
You know, I think it's really interesting what Verizon's doing and really smart. You're going to the providers that have less leverage. And back when I worked at Tech TV, we actually had to pay in some cases to get carried. So it was the opposite situation that you have where the big networks actually get paid and then they force other channels on. It's why Tech TV got sold, was because they couldn't get the carriage they wanted without having a big name partner. At least that was one of the reasons. I think what this does is Verizon says, we see a chink in the market. We know that online streaming is really putting a lot of pressure on providers. We see that whether it's because of cord cutting or not, the subscriber numbers of cable television have been going down. So we have a chance to use that to our advantage. But let's start with the guys who have less leverage against us, see where it goes. I don't think it has a chance for immediate success, but down the road, this could be the kind of thing, if they get a few people to bite, they, as the market changes, they could start to put the pressure on the bigger guys too.
Lamar, what do you make of this story? Do you think that Verizon, I mean, Verizon is the sixth largest pay TV company out there with 4.7 million subscribers. Do you think they have enough leverage against these smaller companies?
Yeah, I think Verizon is just, it's a big name. I think they can definitely, you know, make a difference here. I think it's good for everybody to have this a la carte. The question really that came up in my mind, because I don't know a lot about the cable industry, but if they're able to do this and able to cut their cost, are they going to pass it down to the consumer and allow us to do the same? Because to be honest, I really don't care if they are doing it on their end, but they're not providing the service on our end. I really like that they're using their boxes versus Nielsen boxes, because Nielsen boxes are only in some houses, whereas their Verizon boxes are in every house that owns their service. So I do like that feature. But if it passes down to us, great.
Yeah, Verizon's chief programming negotiator, Terry Denson, he did say, what effect would this have on subscribers? He says that it wouldn't reduce subscribers' bills, but it would stabilize retail prices for consumers.
What the hell does that mean?
I have no idea. Yeah. Can you make any sense of that, Sarah?
Well, I mean, subscriber, consumer, that's kind of we're talking about the same person here. So my bill doesn't get smaller. It just doesn't balloon as fast.
I guess so. They're not, because yes. I guess the carrier distributor's not paying so much for these extra channels that nobody's watching.
Because the rates have been constantly going up, and that's one of the big complaints. I think that's probably what he's trying to say there.
Sarah, with a method like this, if Verizon actually had, I guess, a streamlined package of networks or channels that apparently people are watching, would that make you go back to going back to cable? Because this actually has effectively a curated style of networks.
Well, no, because my whole problem is that I think it's too much money. And if my bill doesn't get any smaller and I have basically less choice, I mean, that doesn't solve my problem, right? If I have less choice based on what I'm actually watching, but I still have the same bill, that doesn't solve my problem.
That's silly.
I'm just kind of curious if people go to Verizon and they go to Fios TV and they're like, oh, wait, I'm the only guy watching this channel. And you start losing channels month to month. I don't know how often you'd have these like disputes pop up of Verizon saying, okay, well, that channel's going away. How much outcry will there be for these other channels? Although then again, when I get that giant package of television from DirecTV or Comcast, I'm probably watching only like 8 or 10 of those things, not like 800.
Well, you know, I mean, Tom brought up the whole Tech TV thing, which is always a good example in conversations like this. You know, where Tech TV did not have great numbers if you compare it to other cable networks, but the people who enjoyed that channel really, really enjoyed it. So, you know, when you sort of start, you get almost into like a dangerous area here where it's sort of like, you know, Verizon's going, well, not enough people are watching this. It's just not worth it. But then the small vocal number of people who really love it end up missing out.
Sounds like Google Reader.
maybe you could subscribe to like shows using RSS instead of using cable.
They should sell Google Reader to Comcast. That'll solve everything.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. You got something to sell? Squarespace's new commerce solution allows you to instantly create a store and sell products. Squarespace Commerce provides powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with every Squarespace template, allowing for sales of both physical and digital goods. You got books? Well, there are ebooks or hardcovers. You can sell them both. Fast merchant account setup. You can start accepting payments right away, credit or debit cards. One interface for order management, tracking orders, providing email updates, printing labels, adding coupons. And Squarespace Commerce is included with the business plan, which starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 a month for a monthly plan. And it still gives you the best mobile experience. Templates with mobile-ready responsive designs. It's fast and easy to use. It's got all that social media integration and those great designs that Squarespace's award-winning design team has created that you can then use and your users get a better experience. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs, domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account, no credit card needed, just try it out, start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT3 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget, with the annual plan, you get a free domain name registration that is yours to keep. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT3. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. All right, I want to talk a little more about those Lenovo ThinkPad T431S Ultrabooks that was mentioned in the news fuse. They have done an 18-month design program to build these up from scratch. They not only took user feedback in that crappy, like, let's sit around in a room and get people to talk about it, they followed users around to actually see how they used them. And that's why you've got a 3.6-pound beautiful laptop that still has an Ethernet port and a VGA port, because they're like, you know what? All the conference boardrooms out there still have VGA projectors, so we're going to make it easy for people. Ayaz, did these things get you excited?
You know, normally I'm a design guy, and I'm staring at this, and it's a big redesign. And the only thing I really noticed was they dropped two of the buttons that were for the track point. Now that's integrated into the trackpad that's a little larger. The thing that I just couldn't figure out is that this is a Windows 8 world, and this is not a touchscreen device. How on earth, at this point, can Lenovo not put touchscreens on something like a ThinkPad if they're going to use Windows 8?
Really? That's your thought?
Well, you know, have you used a Windows 8 laptop without a touchscreen? Yes. It's a mess.
I use a Windows 8 desktop all the time without a touchscreen.
However,
it's just fine.
There are points about the ThinkPad I still quite enjoy. They still keep an Ethernet port. And every time I see an Ultrabook skimp out on that, it drives me nuts. I believe their X1 Carbon does not include an Ethernet port, and I don't understand why that's the case. I mean, the ThinkPad styling is somewhat classic. I like the way it looks, but I'm just miffed about this concept of no touchscreen in today's laptops.
I find that absolutely, like, unnecessary. What do you think, Lamar?
No, I don't agree with him, because I don't think the business person cares about a touchscreen. I think this is 100% a business laptop or what's the type of notebook it is, the Ultrabook, not so much a consumer product. And you know, I used to work in schools. This is the type of thing I would deploy throughout the whole school. Ethernet port, some of these basics, very rugged, because kids will drop it. Employees will drop this. So this is great for business. I see no reason for the touchscreen in it. Sorry, IS. I like you, though.
That's okay. No, I like you, too.
Well, it's not like touchscreen is going to, you know, make it any worse. But, yeah, this seems like the kind of Ultrabook that is just, it's not supposed to appeal to anybody who's like, I want the next gen type thing. It's like they want a solid laptop. It's quick. It's got all the, you know, sort of the old guard of bells and whistles. And touchscreen, like you said, Tom, I mean, you can certainly use a Windows 8 machine without one, desktop or laptop.
I mean, I've tested out a number of Lenovo ThinkPads, and that X1 Carbon Touch was supposed to be the chosen laptop, and they just screwed that up so badly. I was looking forward to Lenovo actually executing this properly, to have an actually good Windows 8 laptop with a good touchscreen, and they didn't do it.
Well, to your point, they say they are going to come out with more models based on this 18-month redesign, and some of those will have touchscreens. So you're not SOL yet. I think that a touchscreen is not a necessity. Now, a lot of people in the chat room agree with Iaz, but here's the thing. What they did in this 18-month design study is they followed people around, they asked them what they wanted, and then they looked at what they actually needed. And they found out a lot of times people say they want something, and then they don't use it. People say, I want 6 USB ports, and they only use 2. So that's why this only has 2. My guess is, y'all are saying, like, well, Windows 8, it's got to have a touchscreen, because that's the way they designed it, and you would not use it.
It's the 3D TV of ultrabooks.
Let's see, 3D is on everything. That's the point. It should just be on everything.
I love touchscreens. I got no problem with touchscreens.
They got to keep that price down. $949.
You know what? Price up was that VGA port. No.
I don't think so.
I mean, I would also say there's a lot of sort of hate for, not hate, but there's been criticism about Windows 8 from manufacturers, and maybe they're taking a step back and saying, Windows 7 is still great, guys. Maybe just use that operating system instead.
You can buy this with Windows 7, too, if you want to. That's a very good point. And the other thing is, a lot of the design changes are subtle if you don't compare it to an old ThinkPad. But the hooks are gone for closing the laptop. They got rid of some of the bumpers and things that were kind of making it look ugly. And it looks a lot more sleek when you set it down next to an old ThinkPad. It's also mil-spec 8 standard for rigidity and durability. So this thing is tough. And that's what I always loved about ThinkPads. I don't know. I'm still tempted. Maybe I'll wait for a touchscreen, but I don't know.
Have you gotten your Pixel yet?
No. That doesn't come till April.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Let's, speaking of mil-spec, talk about making guns.
Yeah, guns. Defense Distributed, which is a group of 3D gunsmiths, had posted on Facebook that Cody Wilson, who is the founder of this group, has now a legal federal license to be a gun manufacturer and a dealer. The group published a picture of this license. It's called a Type 7 Federal Firearms License, or FFL, to prove it. It's real. Wilson spoke to Ars Technica and said, the big thing it allows me to do is that it makes me manufacture under the law. So everything that manufacturers are allowed to do, and same thing as what they can't do, I can sell some of the pieces that we've been making. I can do firearms transactions and transport. The same group, Defense Distributed, recently showed an AR-15, which is a semi-automatic weapon. You can make one in the U.S. without a license. Wilson and group can now legally distribute the guns that he makes, and they can also sell them. Now, Wilson says, we're not actually ready to do that yet because they're waiting on something called a Class 2 Special Occupational Taxpayer, or called SOT. What that does is it grants Wilson the ability to manufacture a fully automatic rifle under the National Firearms Act. This is all very, you know, you got to have the right licenses. Wilson applied for that SOT over the weekend. He said he expects to receive approval within a few weeks. Now, you know, these are the sorts of stories where I just go, 3D guns, this is not going to end well. Now, it sounds like Defense Distributed, obviously, they're being lawful about everything. They're getting the right licenses. They take this stuff seriously. They're being, it sounds like, extremely transparent about the process of what they're going through. However, if a group like Defense Distributed that presumably is jumping through all the right hoops can do this, what about the organizations that will not gain the appropriate licenses, that might have, you get a 3D printer and all of a sudden you can make an automatic rifle. Lamar, does this freak you out as much as it freaks me out?
This is the one story I saw in the lineup that I'm going to have to decline comment on because I don't know enough about the technology. And so I probably would sound stupid answering that question.
Well, I'll sound stupid answering this time.
All right.
Okay. So I was following this story a while ago. This Defense Distributed had come out with a design for a lower for a gun that actually would fire over 600 rounds. The first one failed, I think, after 6. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think one of the weird things is that we're distinguishing between manufacture and 3D printing. I mean, just because you have a new fabrication process, it's scary to people to think that you could print this out using something like a MakerBot. I don't know if you could use something as low-end as that, or I guess consumer-friendly as that. So I don't know if it's frightening that this company now exists and can do this. If I remember right, the fellow in charge of Distributed there, Cody Wilson wanted a gun for everybody. Download this gun was the message. It's an odd idea, but I just think it's kind of like splitting between fabrication and printing.
No, this is 3D printing. This is definitely where this is going. Is you will be able on your MakerBot, when it can do metal deposits easily, to make your own gun. So, I mean, the fact that you can't take the cupcake printer and print a very effective gun part right now, I think, is just because we haven't got there yet. But you will be able to do deposited metal printing. That's what these guys are doing. And the fact that they got a fabrication license is because they were getting in trouble for whether they were legally allowed to print the parts. Now, they felt that under the current law that they could print the parts for their own use, but they wanted to sell them. They said, we actually want to take, you know, these cheaply printed parts that we're making with our 3D printers, and we want to actually sell them on the marketplace. So they went and they got the proper licenses to be able to do that. And Lamar, I understand what you're saying as far as the technology goes, but the overriding issue, I think, is still interesting, whether you know how the technology works or not, which is once it gets there, and it's not there yet, where anybody can buy a 3D printer off the shelf for less than $1,000 that can print out metal parts, and then there's designs that you can download online. Sarah's question is very pertinent. What do we do with that? Do we regulate it? Because we know that the bad guys that would misuse this technology are not going to go by the regulation anyway.
Right.
Or do we do like Charlie Strauss says in Rule 34, the book where there's actually like DRM protection in 3D printers that you'll have to hack around if you want to print something without authorization? What do we do? I think that's a question that there's no easy answer we're going to get to today.
Well, and I worry also about some sort of overreaching laws that if I were to buy a 3D printer, I have to somehow be regulated to make sure, you know, if I end up buying some sort of material that could potentially be used as a gun, even if I'm not going to even get into that, that I have to, I don't know, be checking in regularly. It kind of becomes something something that, especially in the U.S. government, people get really scared about, and then they start taking away people's rights.
To a lesser degree, this reminds me of when printers and color scanners came out, and the idea that printers could put in special messages to say, hey, this is a counterfeit bill. Mm-hmm. You would actually know which printer did what. It actually also works for ransom notes and things like that. So it might be something regulated like that, but who knows how this will work out.
King of Cats points out it's not just the printing of guns, it's the printing of everything.
Yeah, I think the DRM thing that you mentioned would be the most effective. But then again, if people can circumvent it, which they will, that may answer Sarah's question to me about this being scary. In that case, it will, because who knows what they will build at that point. So definitely has to have some kind of regulation, something. But, if I want to buy a 3D printer, like Sarah suggested, I don't want to have to jump through hoops to do that just because you think I'm going to do something bad.
All right, let's finish up with something a little more fun, but it's also controversial. Valve with its Steam Box, and who's making them and who's not and who gets credit for them? What's this about?
Yeah, this story's been developing since last week. Now, PC World has a piece looking at the state of the Steam Box. Now, last week we saw the pre-orders for the Xi3 Piston open up. That's the PC that had Valve's name attached to it as a Steam Box around CES. Now, with the pre-orders, Valve's name just completely disappeared. The company Valve said it had no involvement in the Xi3 product. So the Xi3 released a statement saying, well, we received an investment from Valve, and we were asked to build a product for Valve. And so their dispute might be around Xi3 choosing Windows over Linux as its operating system. That's not confirmed or anything. PC World talked to Xi3's chief marketing officer, David Politis, and he says the company hasn't ruled out working with Valve in the future. Politis did not explain what exactly caused the rift between Valve and Xi3, but he did say the Piston's going to be optimized for Steam. Not a whole lot of detail there. Piston's going to have its own UI for gaming and video, not just Steam. Lamar, what do you make of this public spat? What do you think is going on here?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I'm not sure Valve can control this, but as I was reading this, I was thinking, if they're going to come out with this for the first time, wouldn't it be great or pertinent for Valve to own the experience first, to come up with a model? Hey, if we want it on Linux, this is how it should be, versus letting any company create it, because then you run into conflicts like this. Maybe they don't like that it has Windows on it, so they take their name off, and now this company is left without that support. So they really should have come out with their own. I think it's a great idea. I'm not sure how many people will buy it, but it's a good concept. And yeah, it shouldn't have been given to other companies to do right away.
Tom, we were talking about this last week. What do you make of this? I mean, we've had public statements by each company saying, well, we had nothing to do with this. And one saying, yeah, you guys were here. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it seems like the Windows thing is probably the most likely explanation. There could be all kinds of other contributing factors to it, but remember how Gabe came out against Windows last fall, and that's when we started to hear about this new Linux project. And so the fact that they said, well, no, actually, we're going to put out the Xi3 with Windows as a machine would probably make Valve go, well, then you can't call it a Steam box. It's, you know, you can do it. You can put Steam on it. We're not going to stop you there. That would be stupid, but this is not going to be our partnership. So it's probably a little more complex than that, but it's also probably less intense of a conflict than maybe some people think it is.
I don't believe that Valve has a set of published specifications for what a Steam box is. I think the PC World article backs me up on that. Should Valve have a standard to say, hey, look, anybody can make one as long as you follow these requirements?
Sure, when they're ready to unleash the Steam box, but they haven't unleashed it, you know, I mean, I'm sure they will eventually.
But that's the weird thing, because this was at least touted as a Steam box back at CES. I'm just kind of curious how many times they will do this with another company. I don't know if this operating system, I mean, if the operating system is the spat and Gabe Newell doesn't like Windows, I mean, I don't see what the difference is as long as these companies are skinning it, because it looks like Xi3 is going to be putting a skin over this, over their device to make sure it
Microsoft has a competing store on Windows 8's tiled interface. That's the difference.
Well, it just seems like if you want to be on everybody's system, Windows is not the craziest option.
No, and I don't think Valve's saying you can't do it. They're saying we're just not going to bless it. We're not going to put our push behind it if it's got Windows. Knock yourselves out. Put Steam on whatever you want. We're not going to stop you.
The other thing is, whether Valve blesses something as a Steam box or not, it's going to run Steam. So go play if you want.
Let's move on to the randomizer. We got hackers and 3D printers making weapons, and then we got Pentagon weapons maker making methods for cheap, clean water. Reuters reporting that Lockheed Martin announced that they have created a process to produce thin carbon membranes with regular holes that are about a nanometer in size, large enough to allow water to pass through, but small enough to block the molecules of salt in seawater, thus making it much easier to create clean water for all kinds of areas in the world. This is fantastic. And we got all kinds of efforts to be able to purify water on the go and for cheap. But this is one of the biggest advances I've seen yet.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. I mean, the article made my head hurt reading about all the details. But, you know, there is a water crisis, and, you know, bless their hearts, if they're able to streamline this, let's do it. I'm all for this. This is great.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, like, if it's Lockheed Martin, what's the application of this? I'm thinking military, submarines, this kind of stuff. I guess this would be the technology you'd want to use where you can't bring, you know, a ton of water with you. Mm-hmm. If you're surrounded by it, if you can filter it, I mean, that would be amazing, because that would change a lot of things. I mean, just the idea that salt water could be drinkable, that's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs clean water, military and other people alike. And of course, it's in Lockheed Martin's interest to stress the humanitarian angle of this for press release reasons, but it doesn't mean it won't also actually have a humanitarian angle. And for those, I noticed some people in the chat room talking about this, it's graphene with this process applied, and they're calling it perforene, compared to the thickness of a piece of paper. The nearest comparable filter for extracting salt from seawater would be the thickness of 3 reams of paper, so more than a foot thick. So this is a pretty amazing advance.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break and thank our last sponsor for today's show, Pond5, the world stock media marketplace. Lamar, you know the pain of trying to come up with stock footage, stock sound effects, stock music for
every
things.
Single day.
Yeah. And so trying to find it and make sure that you got the rights to it. There's some great Creative Commons stuff out there, sure. But when you want a really good source that you don't have to pay a ton of money for and you know you can use it legally in your creative works, check out Pond5 Photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, customizable motion graphics templates, 3D models, and more. Pond5 is great for developers, designers, video makers, filmmakers. You can use Pond5 for high-quality sound effects for games. You can, when you're designing something, you don't have to make everything from scratch. It could save you some time. And you can upload your own stuff. If you're an artist, they're actually shaking up the stock agency business by letting you to control the price. And then you get 50% royalties for each and every sale. That's a higher payout than other stock photo marketplaces. So if you're a media maker or an artist, you should absolutely check out Pond5. Take your creativity to the next level or upload your own content and put it to work at the world's most artist-friendly marketplace for stock media. This month, you can get 50 free stock media files by going to pond5.com/TNT. That's P-O-N-D, the number 5.com/TNT. And we thank Pond5 for their support of Tech News Today.
You're going to make me sign pond5. Up for that because I have heard you talk about that enough times.
You should. I mean, you might as well sign up, and then you just buy the stuff as you need it. But you can get the 50 free stock media files if you sign up right now.
Definitely going to do it. Thanks, man.
Yeah. No, thank you for supporting the show and Pond5. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Electronic Arts and DICE have sent out an invitation for an upcoming Battlefield 4 event in San Francisco on March 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific time. The event occurs during the 2013 GDC that takes place from March 25th through the 29th. Wow, it's right around the corner. Plus, Microsoft is going to end Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7.8 support in 2014. The support page lists both of the OSs, says that Windows Phone 7.8 will stop being supported on September 9th, 2014. Windows Phone 8 will only receive support through July 8th, 2014.
Yeah, that gives us a little bit of time.
Yeah, you got over a year for both.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Dave from Singapore. He says, "Hey, TNT crew, I'd like to add to episode 710 where it was mentioned that Samsung might be using Microsoft as a proxy to toy with its hardware competitors. While I disagree that Samsung would take such an indirect and inefficient route in eliminating competition, Samsung has a very strong incentive to suppress the Windows Phone operating system. History has shown that software is clearly the dominant force in the computing industry, whether it be in mainframes, microcomputers, and even now in mobile computing. While Android is technically controlled by Google, Android is the only recognized operating system where hardware companies are free to customize and brand to their liking. When Samsung launches new smartphones, it emphasizes features and not the OS. This is the reason for the whole S Voice, S Pen, S Everything. They want consumers to know they are buying a Samsung product, period. Not an Android device running on a Samsung hardware. Samsung cannot do the same with Windows Phone. The manner in which Microsoft controls the Windows Phone OS makes it unsuitable as an alternative. As a result, there's no incentive for Samsung to push Windows Phone. Love the show. Keep up the great work." It's definitely an interesting idea that Windows Phone can't be customized the same degree as Android. But I think Microsoft tried to open that up a little, but who knows what's going on with that.
All right, that's it for this show. Thank you, Lamar Wilson, for joining us. Let folks know about what you're working on. You're doing a new show with Leo. Tell them about that.
Yeah, we're doing a new show called This Week in YouTube. It's every Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific, and we're still in beta mode, but it should be out in a couple weeks. And we give you YouTube news. We talk about viral videos, and I give you professional tips on how to get better as a content creator on YouTube or as a viewer. So make sure you check that out. It's a really fun show. Chad Johnson is also in it. And we are a powerhouse.
You can't be stopped.
Yes. And, of course, you can always find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Lamar Wilson with two R's. Or on Google Plus or Twitter, either one of those. I'm everywhere.
Thanks for being willing to come on as often as you are, Lamar. It's great.
No problem. Glad to be here.
You can also submit stories at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. If you want to have a voice in what stuff we pick, we look at that every day as one of our sources for news. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Ryan Block from Gadgets of AOL, but I think he's got a different job, and he'll explain that tomorrow when we see him then.
Quietly rocking.